Welcome to the Everyday Hotel. You'll be on the second floor and your other room will be on the 14th.
Wait, we asked for connecting rooms? These are 12 floors apart.
We tried, ma'am, but technically they're only 11 floors apart. We don't have a 13th floor.
We can't be 11 floors away from our kids.
I don't see a problem.
Stuart!
When you want separate rooms, but not that separate, it matters where you stay. Only Hilton offers confirmed connecting rooms at the time of booking. Hilton, for the stay.
Hi, it's Idris Elba here with Booking.com, and I wrote this poem about summer because I love summer. In summer, we do things to feed the soul, and Booking.com knows just how we roll. We love to swim and fish and barbecue. We love to read and nap and have a few. With cabins, resorts, yurts, and vacation homes, it's such a breeze to book. Where shall we roam? I know it needs some work, but thanks for listening. Find your perfect place to stay. Booking.com. Booking.yeah.
All right. Welcome. Welcome. Better late than never. 6 minutes after the 2 o'clock hour here in the Eastern time zone of Detroit. Thanks everyone for joining us. It's 70 degrees and sunny here. I feel like I have a new lease on life. Jason Raznick, our CEO, what do you think?
Yeah, it's sunny. I mean, beginning of the week, it was just rain. And now sunny, which I think just brings a smile to the face. You know, that's what I think it does. You know?
Absolutely, man. Especially we've all been stuck inside for so long. I feel like now we can actually get out of the house for a little bit, you know?
Yep. My 3-year-old and I, we do a mini walk run around the block. We've done it 2 days in a row now. It's pretty funny because she's 3 years old and watching her run. And to be honest, she's in a lot better shape than I am. So I can at least sort of keep up with her.
I can relate to that.
It's like, I mean, she's one I could, if I have to do with my wife, she'll blow me away and won't have the patience to run with me.
I would imagine that's a common theme for you.
Yeah. Thanks, Patrick. Thanks.
I'm here for you, man. I'm here for you. Yes. All right. Well, welcome everyone. Let's get this rolling. I know we're a couple minutes late. So a couple things to chat about right off the bat. Some exciting announcements. We announced some additions to our Benzinga Cannabis Advisory Council today. And rather than just name the additions, I think I'm just going to rattle off the folks that are on it. There are about 15 people, really, really solid leaders in the industry, two of whom you're going to hear from today. So Al Harrington from Viola Brands, who you saw the last Cannabis Hour that we did, Kim Rivers from Trulieve, Jason White from Curaleaf, Cody Sanchez from Entourage Effect Capital, Beth Stavola from Ianthus, Nancy Whiteman joining us today from Wana Brands, Lori Kibbe from King's Garden, Jim Kirsch from AGP, Javier Haas, our very own managing director at Benzinga Cannabis, Tahira Ramatulla from T3 Ventures, she is up first, Dr. Sean Demasius from Ilera Holistic Healthcare, Jeff Wells from Metric, Emily Paxia from Poseidon, Morgan Paxia from Poseidon, David Leiter from Focus Growth, the dynamic duo Phil Carlson and Lewis Goldberg from KCSA, Alan Brockstein, the 420 investor, Barrington Miller from the CSE, Everett Knight from Valens, Dave Bakke from AGP, David Cohen from Fluence by Osram, and Lori Ferrara from Treehouse Global Ventures. An absolute mouthful of names, but holy crap, a lot of really cool people.
Totally. I mean, those are awesome names. Will you give a little description of what the advisory council is and what it means and all that?
Yeah, the advisory council is really important to us, right? It's an initiative that we started at the beginning of this year. And the goal for us was to continue to be the place where the conversation happens in this industry, right? Especially where it pertains to finance, right? We're a financial media company, and we want to lift up the stories in this industry that matter. And what better way to do that than to involve those newsmakers, those executives who are, you know, sort of pushing the limits, you know? That's our number one goal.
Yep. And if there's other people listening who think that they, you know, can help set the agenda and help make decisions and this industry grows, please reach out to us. We really want this to be inclusive and smart people that like to get things done. You can reach out to Patrick. It's at Patrick Lane LANE at Benzinga.com or events at Benzinga.com, and it goes to all of us, and that's BENZINGA.com. I know some of you guys are mentioning that you're not able to hear us and see us, so I'm looking at the YouTube chat. So if you can see us, give us a number one up. If two, if you can't see us, well, I guess you wouldn't be able to say anything. So I know our team is working on it. This will be recorded. This will be recorded for other listeners. So you can hear this after the fact. But I know some people are in the BZ Cannabis Hour link.com, I guess. Maybe you need to refresh the page to see it. But hopefully this is all getting fixed. So thank you. Now, I want to just spend 1 minute thanking one of our sponsors who's involved with this. And we've done a bunch of work with. And this is Cannabis. This is run by Jamie Cooper. So we partner with them on different things. She's located here in Michigan. But if you're looking to stay connected with cannabis business professionals, we encourage you to check out some of the events hosted by Cannabis Connection. Cannabis Connection hosts two virtual B2B speed networking events each week, bringing the community together and keeping them connected and looking for strategic partners. Their events are hosted on Wednesday from 6 to 7:30 and Friday 4 to 5. For more information, see cannabisconnection.com. And that is run
really
by
good at that, man.
And that is run by our good friend, Jamie Cooper.
Awesome. So without further ado, first up is our good friend, Tahira Rematala, who's probably regretting that she decided to do this today. She's an investor. She's an advisor to a number of cannabis and hemp businesses. She's an entrepreneur. She's lived on both sides of that investor and operator coin in this industry. The companies that she's been involved with, M-Tech, Hyper Ventures, Marley Natural, Privateer, you know, some of the cream of the crop of this industry. Tahira, welcome.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Awesome. We are good. Where are you today?
I am in New York City.
New York. So you've braved this this pandemic in the city itself? Or are you
on the outskirts? Yeah, wow. So far. Just hunkered down here in New York, and so far so good.
Are you taking part in are they still doing those 7 o'clock?
They sure are. It's a good reminder that it's 7 o'clock when you start hearing that's not you sirens. Even that has like calmed down in New York, which is a little bit strange, just given that that's a constant background noise. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely quiet. I've never seen New York quite this quiet before. So we'll see what happens. I mean, daily walks is just the way to keep ourselves amused, I guess.
Wait, you guys, I think I may know what you're saying, referring to, but the 7 p.m., is that when you go out and sing or something? What is the 7 p.m.?
Yes, I go out and sing every single day out my window.
Mm-hmm. Just her, by the way.
Just me.
Yep.
Microphone. So it's 7 p.m. every evening in New York and a lot of major cities, I think, across the country. People will start cheering and, you know, banging pots and pans and making noise as a way to thank the essential workers, in particular, the hospital staffs. I think it started with that was when shift changes would happen. So there would be, you know, kind of a changing of the guard, if you will.
Yep.
And so that's maintained. So, I mean, it started pretty early, I think sometime in March, and it's going, it keeps going.
Got it. I just, are you getting comfortable like working from home? Is that what you did before or?
Yeah. I mean, my setup was always a bit, you know, I was either constantly traveling and actually I realized that the last event that I went to last time I left New York was for Benzinga Miami.
Oh really?
So thank you guys for that was my last adventure. So I spent a lot of time traveling, and then when I am in New York I tend to work from home. I do have an office, but I rarely go to it, so this was not anything terribly out of the ordinary. The most the biggest thing that was a change in my schedule was the fact that I haven't been on a plane in the last 2 months, and usually it was every week at most, you know, or at minimum every other week. So
you're missing. So after this, but Patrick will get to like, I know we're short for time, but you're missing your freaking flyer miles a little bit then, right?
Yeah. They're definitely not getting Delta status this year, which is so really sad.
Delta status. I know they extended it for next year.
They did. So I'm kind of like, okay, fine. All right. But you know, this is, for those of us who play the mileage game, so it's our little joys. I haven't opened the Delta app in 2 months to check
I used to
How close am I?
I used to check that Delta app and figure out different ways. And there's like a whole community to here that I've learned how to like do the Delta games and other tricks. And
right, we're going to have to collaborate later. You're going to have to teach me everything when this is
you should never, you should never have opened this can of worms. He wants to teach a course.
I do.
At the collegiate level or something. Like Yale should call him. Yale, if you're out there listening, call Jason about the Sky Miles.
Yeah, because here I got taught it from someone who's like a sports agent to like one of the biggest names in the world. And his methods he has are so unbelievable that, and then he, you know, and I was like shocked at it, the steps he goes to, but he has mastered it. So we should have a call because I learned from him and then learned how to get diamond or platinum in not as hard of a way to do it. But this guy was just like, whatever. Anyway, I'm sorry, Patrick. I know we want to get into good stuff.
No worries. I want to hear more about Tahira than your Sky Mile status. So
I want to hear about Sky Miles, but that's fine. We can do that.
It's fine. Whatever. Next time. Sky Miles hour.
Yeah, so, Sky Miles hour. I love it. Okay.
So listen, you've done everything in this industry, right? So one of the things that I wanted to ask you, I was really curious about, how did you get into this, right? I feel like you started in the finance space, right?
And you did, yep.
Was Privateer the first cannabis-oriented stop on the trail for you?
It was. So I, my background previous to cannabis was in financial services. I worked at Ernst & Young and then was at a hedge fund, both here in New York. Did a one-year stint at a nonprofit in DC. And then I went to business school at Yale. And that's actually when I started to look at cannabis more. And it was entirely driven by the fact that during my second year of business school, my grandfather was diagnosed with lung cancer. And so it was the fall of 2013. And my mother was his primary caretaker. I grew up in Ohio and my mom kept trying to find alternative treatments to make him more comfortable and just, you know, get him through chemo. And one day she texted me and my younger sister and said, "Do you know where to get marijuana?" And my younger sister immediately called me and she was like, "Do you think this is a test?" And I was like, you know, I think we're a little too old for this. So let me find out what's happening. And my mom kept coming across cannabis as a form of treatment when she would go and do, you know, her deep dives into research on anecdotal stories around other things that more natural remedies that would help people with cancer. But this was 2013, other early 2014. So it obviously wasn't available in Ohio and very few places in the country. So I started doing my own research and just started, you know, thinking about it a lot more and understanding what was happening in other parts of the country and other parts of the world, and was really fascinated by it, by the fact that there was so much anecdotal evidence around how, you know, it was helping people as a medicine, and was really struck by the fact that it wasn't available. I mean, I obviously had it around me growing up in small town Ohio, and you knew how to access the illegal market, but that certainly wasn't something I was going to give to my 80 plus year old grandfather who was suffering from cancer. And so that part of it too, really just kind of made me go into my own rabbit hole of research. And then really understanding, I think the history was another thing that got me fired up on just understanding why was it made illegal in the first place and what happened along the way and how did this war on drugs start and who did it target and why. And really that was just me doing that on my own. I didn't think that there was a career or a job to be had in the space. And then I was really fortunate that Privateer Holdings, actually, the two of the three founders also went to Yale about 10 years before I did. They were just starting to ramp up their growth at that time. So it was just a very fortunate coincidence that around then I was starting to look into it more and they were starting to build their team. So I started with them on their investment team and then landed in a position where I built and launched one of the brands that's in their that was in their portfolio and has now spun out.
Awesome. So let's fast forward just a bit for a second and talk about MTech and MJ Freeway, which is now Akerna, right? And the just your role there, right? You were CFO, right, for a little while, and then now you're on the board of directors for Akerna, right?
Yeah, so I was CFO of the SPAC, and as myself, Scott Sozio, and Steve Van Dyke, I knew them from Hyper Ventures, which is a venture capital fund that they were co-founders of, and you know, worked that whole process with getting it listed and going through the whole process. And really, I mean, we were one of the early SPACs in the space at a time when if you said SPAC to someone, nobody knew what you were talking about. And now I feel like I hear it everywhere. So it's funny right. how this was late 2017 when we started the setup for it. And we IPO'd in January 2018. And, you know, look at the market now. There are like, I don't know, 15 to 18 SPACs that are active in the space. You know, one of the biggest challenges that we had was just explaining to investors and then businesses what a SPAC was and how it worked. And so, you know, really it's a structure that is incredibly well suited for the stage of the cannabis market, just given elements of, you know, you need to be able to understand the businesses. There isn't always a straight path to IPO. There are liquidity needs. There are also needs for bringing management teams together and bringing more resources together to make a business more robust. So fascinating process. I mean, good luck to everybody out there who's working on them right now. I think that it's better now because there are so many more, so people understand it and it's not as difficult to kind of understand the pros and cons and be able to navigate that whole process.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So I was going to ask you, I mean, when it comes to that approach and then just certainly where we are with the markets right now, so many distressed companies out there, so many companies that perhaps were going to go public and have through whatever method and have decided to hold off on that. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that right now? When do you, well, perhaps I won't ask you when. Why don't we ask you instead when it comes to where those companies are, maybe what's one of their best paths forward right now, if they're either distressed or waiting for these markets to clear up a bit?
I mean, I think it's, you know, I think I'm in the mindset that there were too many businesses that went public at a time when capital was a lot easier to access and the path was just pretty straightforward. And a lot of those companies have since struggled just given the dynamics of being a public company and having to, you know, go through the rigor of what that entails. Being a public company is not easy. You're essentially running two companies. You're running the public side of it and then the business itself. And you know, you need a lot of resources under the hood to be able to achieve that. So I think for businesses who were potentially on the path, I think this is just a really good time to reevaluate and reset on, well, what was the point of the IPO? If it was a capital play, then what are other ways to bolster your balance sheet or reduce your costs and really streamline your business to ensure that you're set up for long-term growth. I think a lot of businesses, we were kind of in this catch-all period where people were just going out and grabbing what they could to put under the hood because they either had the ability to do that or they had a public currency with which you could do transactions. And that's just not the case anymore. Right now, businesses need to focus. And the path to an IPO isn't as straightforward as it was. More businesses are trying to see how do they become public in the US versus in Canada, where most of the businesses were able to list on the CSE. But you know, it's a different analysis for every business, but the reality is that every business needs to understand what are their strengths right now, what are their weaknesses, how do they eliminate or at least reduce some of those weaknesses in order to survive this period. And cannabis obviously has been deemed an essential business. At the same time, every industry is hurting right now. So how do you mitigate more risks and take this period as a time to reflect? I mean, that goes for everybody, but particularly for these businesses right now.
Sure, sure. Well, I think there's probably time for a couple more questions here. And I think something Patrick, that's always...
Go ahead, Patrick.
Oh, no, go for it, man. Go.
Where do you think we are? Like, what inning in the business landscape? I mean, industry is going to get bigger. People are going to purchase and medical is going to get bigger. There's a lot of companies trying to get in. What inning do you think we are if it was a baseball game?
I'm terrible at understanding baseball. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. Sports. You know, I think we're still early in how much growth and opportunity is still left in the industry. You know, I think that we lived a whole lifetime of an industry in the span of 4 to 5 years. And that was way too fast. We should have slowed it down. There was just, everybody got excited. We went from a period where there was no capital available and nobody wanted to touch cannabis to there was all the capital. Everybody wanted to do it. And now we're back to people being on the sidelines and wanting to really understand what's happening within the industry, what direction it's going in, and likening it to other industries, to the trajectory of other industries, which, you know, history is a good learning point to understand what happened in other industries, and also take those pieces to understand when it's overheated and how do you reduce that and kind of start again. So I think that we're in a bit of a, you know, reset phase. You know, I think we're barely halfway there. So what is that? The third inning, the fourth inning?
Love it. I love it. You responded very well to that trap baseball question. Yeah. So one more thing, and I think we can probably close it out on this one. So Tahira, when it comes to what's important to you, just from my own conversations with you over the last couple of years, I know that diversity is something that's pretty important to you, especially in this industry. So I wonder if taking this time to reset, not only the business models and from a capital perspective, focusing on what's important, obviously there were a lot of people that potentially lost their jobs from this COVID crisis. And I wonder, as these companies are resetting, and as they look to potentially add people back when the ship gets righted, mm-hmm. If there will be that emphasis on diversity. And obviously I hope so, but I wonder if there's more you'd like to say to that.
Yeah, I think it's something that the industry has struggled with for quite some time, and a lot more recruiting and placement companies are also focused on how do you diversify the workforce and provide more opportunity to a broader base of individuals. So, you know, I come from finance, and after a while, when I would walk into cannabis conferences, it could have been a finance conference for all I knew, you know, kind of looked and felt the same, and the conversations were similar in that context, which is not a bad thing, but has led to some degree, exclusion of other groups that have more traditionally been involved with cannabis, or, you know, want to get in, but maybe don't have the resources, you know, be it capital or certain levels of education, that are starting to create this kind of exclusionary bias. But I think that there is a heavy focus on it. And for businesses themselves, you know, you think about what you want your organization to look like. And what does that mean? It's not just for the sake of having diversity, so people can say, oh, they're diverse. It's for diversity of thought. It's for extension of opportunity. It's to be able to engage with more populations because you understand them more. And it's not just on the businesses too, you know, it's on the boards of those companies, it's on the communities that surround them. It's in policy too, right? We have all of these different policies that have been established across the state to help with minority applications or giving people more access, but they're all kind of in flux. They're all working through their own kinks and trying to understand what's the best way to actually create these empowerment programs. And I don't think we've gotten it right yet, but I think it's a work in progress. And so people also have to understand that the only way change happens is if we keep at it. We can't just say, okay, we did that policy, it didn't work, so we'll move on. We have to keep creating that change. And I mean, that goes with just legislation in general, right? It's never perfect the first time around. So, you know, I encourage a lot of companies to just keep that in mind and actually make it a priority. It's definitely easier said than done. When you want to just hire fast, you kind of go for who you find first, which I've been in that scenario too. I've built companies and teams before, and it's challenging, but I think ultimately it pays dividends in the long run.
Sure, sure. Well, thank you. Thanks for your time today, Tahira. Is there anything else you'd like to say, or if people want to follow up with you, how they should get in contact with you?
Sure. You can find me on LinkedIn or Instagram, Tahira Rem. Thank you guys for having us. And, you know, I know that there are exciting things on the Benzinga side. I'm excited to be part of the council. So thank you guys for that inclusion. And this is fun. This is a good way for us to stay connected.
You know, yeah, why not?
Yes, we're excited to have you. And then we'll have to set up another call to talk Sky Miles, Delta
for sure.
And all the... Oh,
I would like a private tutorial.
Yeah, I mean,
I want to go on vacation that day.
I met this guy at a wedding and literally talked to him for 2 hours and just took notes. He was very guarded to tell me some of the stuff. So yeah, we'll have to do it private because he doesn't want to give away his secrets. But
I'll be here.
Okay, I'll be here. So we'll connect.
Perfect. Awesome. Cool. Thank you, Tahira.
Take care.
Yep. Patrick.
Awesome. What a wealth of knowledge she is. She's literally been everywhere.
Yeah. And she had, from privateer, she's been in the industry and just knows the game, knows the industry. You're not going to stump her. And just, it's awesome when, like, you know, people have a long history in this space and can bring that perspective. That's why I kind of wanted to ask the baseball analogy, just to hear her perspective, because I mean, I think similar. I still think we're very early to figure it all out. I mean, I think so early. I think a lot of the companies that are around, you know, could change names, could see M&A, but it reminds me of the very beginning times when like Amazon and those kind of companies were starting. And, you know, so, all right. But I know you have introduce our
guest. I have more, my friend. So up next, we have Nick Kovacevic, CEO of Cushco Holdings. And as he joins us, I'll tell you a little bit about Nick and Cushco. Cushco is the premier provider of ancillary products to the legal cannabis and CBD market. Nick, last year you guys had, is this right, $150 million in annual sales?
149. We came very
close. Oh man, 149. If only you had that extra mil, man. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome, Nick. You look great. Where are you? Are you in California?
I am in beautiful Orange County. I live in Newport Beach, and you know, it's tough working from home when the weather's so nice, I will admit.
Yes. Yes. You guys generally have the nice weather. We in Detroit get it, what, 3 months out of the year? So we're a little jealous of you for sure.
About the nice weather, I have to say one thing. I bought a monitor. It's about $119. So, you know, I like to have two monitors when I'm working. This monitor is on techbargains.com, and it's so you can work. I can work outside and have a very similar experience. You don't need to plug it into the wall. It takes the power off your computer. Ooh. It is awesome. So if you ever want to work outside and still that two monitor thing, this thing is cheap, and I've been trying it the last 2 days, and it is great. I don't know why more external monitors aren't like it. I don't know what
I like it.
And you like carry it like it's like a little thing. I don't know. I'll send you the link to it. But for working outside, Patrick, I got you covered.
I need that. I really do. I want to get out for a little bit today. I got a lot of yard work to do. Nick, you've been around this industry, I feel like, since the beginning. You guys are one of the OG companies in this space, man. Give me a little flavor about what Cushco is up to now. And obviously, what was it, 2014 you started the company?
You know, actually, we're going to be coming up here on our 10-year anniversary December.
Wow.
So, we started in 2010. But, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. And at the time, it was very tough to build this business when the federal government and local governments were literally shutting down and arresting our clients. So, you know, I ended up doing a few other things with my business partners. And then in 2014, when Colorado legalized, that's when there was a clear movement in our business, you know, up and to the right. And it just made sense for me to come back and be the full-time CEO. So I've been the CEO since 2014, but I'm one of the co-founders since December of 2010.
Wow. So how have you seen this industry change, man? I mean, from onset to where we are now, what does that trajectory look like to you?
You know, it's phenomenal. I think, you know, one of the reasons that me and my partner got into this industry was because of the fact that nobody was focusing on it. So we saw an opportunity as a couple of young entrepreneurs, if you're going to go, you know, start a new business in any other industry, you're going to be breaking in. You're going to be dealing with people that have, you know, historically been there for, you know, 15, 20, 30 years, and you're going to have to try to carve your niche. Well, with this industry, we noticed that there was a lot of dispensaries, medical marijuana dispensaries at the time that were, you know, sort of hiding in plain sight. They didn't really want to be seen. It was a lot of mom and pop, you know, proprietors, you know, no franchises, you know, for the most part. And we thought, hey, this is a great opportunity for us to build relationships and to be able to add value. And we're knocking on doors that essentially no one else is knocking on. So again, that was then. There was a lot of things that were different. Like I mentioned, it was still very dangerous. So folks that were operating these businesses at the time were taking major risks personally, criminally. So it's tremendous. And we met a lot of phenomenal people. Some of those people have been able to maintain in this industry and are still successful and still around, but the vast majority of them have, you know, changed out, and we see, you know, new entrants. Now you have these multi-state operators, which is primarily who we deal with. And, you know, these are some of the smartest, you know, highly educated folks that are very well capitalized, that are building this business in, you know, multiple states, you know, in some instances, you know, 15 to 20 different states that they're operating. You got your Canadian LPs that are listed on major exchanges that are operating globally. So the dynamic has shifted tremendously, and we've had to shift along with it. And we've dealt with this, you know, year in and year out. And people have often looked at our business and said, well, how are you guys going to adjust to this and that? And I said, well, we're used to that. We're adjusting to these changes all the time. It's in our DNA. And we're proud of the ability to be able to react quickly and make the necessary adjustments to continue to keep up with where the industry is going. And I think we've done a good job of maintaining a leadership role throughout the last decade.
Awesome. Well, one quick follow-up. I know Jason's got something for you, but when it comes to your clientele, right, and or the folks that you're working with on a daily, day in, day out basis, with these large MSOs that are really leading the forefront of where we are right now, what happens when you take a look around the landscape right now and some of those folks that were buying up a ton of assets and moving across state lines in so many different directions, what's the effect on you guys when you see some of those guys falter, right? And you see that business model, you know, the light shining on it, and maybe there's some cracks in the glass there with some of the ways those guys were really trying to expand and ended up getting out over their skis.
Yeah, and I think it's a direct correlation to the capital markets, and we're no different. We were a profitable company for, you know, since I joined as CEO in 2014 and 2015, 2016, and even 2017. And then what happened in 2018 is this rush of capital came in, and right. You know, the message to entrepreneurs and business leaders at the time was, okay, now's the time to go grow. Now's the time to grab market share. And, you know, this isn't unique to cannabis. I mean, that was also the theme in Silicon Valley, and that's all changed tremendously in the last year. Cannabis, I think, has its own dynamics where we just simply ran out of capital because we can't access all of the traditional sources that normal industries can. But even in the venture world, we saw with WeWork, you know, the change in mentality. People don't want companies that are growing at fast clips and burning capital. So we all have to adjust back. And I think, you know, the MSOs are certainly dealing with it, and folks that took on tremendous amounts of debt are in a world of hurt where they're having to now restructure. But they'll come out of it. I mean, the companies, the brands, the licenses, all of that's very valuable. Yes, the equity is going to be significantly disrupted. But, you know, you need that sometimes as an industry matures. These types of events happen. There's going to be a shakeout. Some folks won't make it. The folks that are executing now, you're seeing they're getting actually stronger and more valuable, and you're going to start to see that separation. So I think it's healthy to some degree. It's unfortunate that the capital, you know, sort of dissipated so quickly, because I think, you know, if you just look at this objectively, the upside is still there more than ever. You know, mm-hmm. money should be pouring into this industry, and it's not. And some of that has to do with the regulatory environment. But as an entrepreneur, you can't sit there and complain and say, oh, I wish it was the way it used to be. You just got to adjust. You have to pivot. And I see a lot of companies doing that, and they're selling off assets that are not profitable. They're doubling down in areas that are profitable. And it's going to be a little bit more measured growth over the next few quarters until we get that big influx of capital, and people may go back to more hyper growth, but I don't think it will ever go back to the way it was, because as I mentioned, it's changing across all sectors and just, you know, the appetite for investors to pour money into companies that are burning cash.
Yep. Yep. And Nick, so everyone knows, you guys are a public company symbol. KSHB.
You got it.
Yep. KSHB. And you're talking about the stock market responding just to revenue and then looking for cash flow. Your company has been around. It's the real deal. And when I was looking at one of the quarterly statements, one of the things where you guys had your expenses increased was because, you know, vendors or people that bought from you weren't paying. Are you seeing that improving? Or you were talking about how you guys had to take a write-off of bad debt of people that owed you guys money. What happened there? Because your company has product that people buy, but I think it was last quarter or something you mentioned that.
Yeah, last quarter we wrote off $9 million of bad debt. And this was something that, you know, we took the opportunity, if we were going to, you know, write some stuff down, we wanted to go through the whole, you know, accounts receivable list and write off literally everything that we didn't have a high probability of thinking that we were going to collect in the near term, you know, per the GAAP rules. So we took the hit, right? We bit the bullet, so to speak. But, you know, it signifies, and we've been talking about it for a long time, the risk to our business, something we actually, you know, weren't as prepared for as we should have been in hindsight. But now we're acutely aware of, you know, the biggest risk to us, that we're picks and shovels provider. And so, you know, part of our spiel is that, you know, we hedge as a proxy for an investment, because you don't have to take a big bet on any one Canadian LP or one US MSO, but rather invest in a company like us that services broadly across that whole sector. And you're going to get a small piece of the growth of the industry without the risk. But what we didn't realize was that we're only going to be as good as the solvency and liquidity of our clientele. And we ran into a situation primarily in California where the liquidity dried up tremendously. It started with the vape crisis, where a lot of brands that we did business with were actually in the process of financing, had term sheets, et cetera. And overnight people said, oh gosh, I'm scared of vape. There's no way I'm making this investment. That was also compounded, and I think accelerated by the coronavirus. Now, just investors in general are very tight with their cash, and they're saying, well, you know, every dollar is worth $3 now, because opportunities are going to keep coming up, you know, where there's distressed situations. And so, you know, the last thing a lot of investors want to do is deploy in a risky sector like cannabis, even though we're starting to see people get past that as they realize that the cannabis is one of the sectors that's thriving during the coronavirus. But the point is, you know, our customers have had a very tough time, especially in California, raising capital. They've also ran into a challenge where a lot of the retailers that they sell to haven't been paying them in a timely fashion. We all know about MedMen and what they did to a lot of their vendors that had outstanding debts. We know that Ease as well has been in the past in you know, financial distress, where they haven't been able to pay people in a timely fashion. So if you have a small cannabis brand that's doing, you know, 10 or 11 or $15 million a year in sales, and they have $1 million dollars or so between a couple vendors that they're not collecting, that could be catastrophic for these companies. And so it was no surprise that it trickled down to us, and we weren't getting paid in a timely fashion. And so we decided that, hey, we're going to shift the business. We're going to write off this bad debt. We're going to wait, and we're going to see what happens in the California market. We're going to be very stringent with who we underwrite in that marketplace. We'll still do business, but it's got to be cash up front. And we'll focus more on the MSOs and LPs who, you know, some of them have had their liquidity struggles as well. But for the most part, as a public company, you're going to have access to capital, right? You've got the balance sheet, you've got the asset profile, and we're extending more credit there and being a little bit more judicious with the other group for the time being. And again, hopefully that shifts at some point.
No, and I think investors like to see companies like you guys. By you know, doing those kind of things, it sets the right tone. And that's like, your company has been around and has a brand, sells product, does a great job. And you know, when a sector gets hit, everyone falls in the sector. That's just what happens. And I think smart investors who pay attention will find these hidden opportunities that, you know, like, well, the reason I mentioned that, because I thought that was amazing. Like, yes, you don't want to have to have customers not pay you guys. But I think it's amazing for you guys to take that, because you never know if those guys will come back. But you're like, the way I look at it is, you're like planning for the worst, but hoping for the best, but executing amazing to make sure that happens. So
yeah, and
patient. Go ahead.
I appreciate you recognizing that as one of the, you know, things that I wanted to talk about today. You know, just, you know, what we're doing. So we're executing, to your point. That's our focus. And when the time was to grow, I think we grew organically as well as anyone, right? We went from 20 million in sales to 50 million to 150 million nearly in sales. And, you know, over 3 years, and that's tremendous. And now the goal has changed. And now the goal is all about profitability and sustainability and managing liquidity. And we're very excited to prove to Wall Street investor community that we can execute there as well. And we're going to do it very quickly. So when these events have transpired, first the vape crisis, now the coronavirus, we were quick to make adjustments to the business and cost cutting. We unfortunately had moved, you know, to do layoffs, right? It was tough, but it was the right decision. We were able to lay people off. We were able to reduce our consultant spend, reduce our facility costs very quickly. And now we have a very ambitious goal that I don't think people really fully understand the undertaking that we're doing to make this happen. We spent on a normalized basis, if you back out the one-time things, $13.6 million in cash SG&A for our fiscal second quarter. We told people that we're going to have that number at $7.5 to $8.5 million by our fiscal Q4, which it's not two quarters. It's actually 90 days that we're going to drop our costs in our business by roughly 40%. Wow. Just think about that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think people are recognizing, you know, or maybe they know, but they want to see it. But we're ready to surprise everybody with this execution around this new plan. We think that, you know, people have, you know, kind of now shifted us to be more of an underdog. Our stock is, you know, trading at all time lows. We've been public since 2016. So we were public before, you know, virtually all 99% of the cannabis sector. We've executed, we've quadrupled, quintupled the business, and yet our stock is at an all-time low. So we actually see this as an opportunity. We're very competitive at our company. I come from athletics, played college basketball. Our president, Jason Bogotsky, same with him, played college basketball. We're very competitive. And we see this is, we love this. People are counting us out. Our stock's at an all-time low. And here we are in the background just executing really well, feeling great about our plan, and it's all going to show up at some point.
Nick, before Patrick takes us out, to drop the SG&A that, you know, that much that quickly, that's pretty impressive. Is there like one main driver of that?
No, I mean, that's the thing. It was across the board, a very, you know, detailed look at the business. We made headcount reductions. We did facility reductions. We even had to shift our strategic focus of the business and eliminate non-core activities as well. So it was across the board.
Got it. Okay.
Wow. Wow. Cool. I've got one question from the chat, Nick, that I want to pose your way, and then I'll take us out here. So this is from Mitch. Mitch is asking, with the reinvestment in CGC, which is Canopy Growth, for those of watching, the reinvestment in CGC from Constellation Brands, do you think we see other big companies follow suit and double dip?
Well, I think people are still a little gun shy. I think the reason there was so much activity back when Constellation invested initially and followed by Altria and other high profile partnerships and investments was because the timeline to federal legality seemed very near term. Mm-hmm. And that's why we also saw the Acreage Canopy deal get done. And they put 7.5 years, but everybody thought it was going to happen within the next two. So that has changed. People are now not optimistic because of the fact that no cannabis legislation has been able to get through, the most benign being the Safe Banking Act, which is now in play again, so to speak, and we'll see what happens. But I'm putting out a piece actually today on Forbes. I mean, I know you guys published a recent piece that I did as well, so I appreciate that. I'm putting out another piece today that talks about really why the Senate race is much more important for the cannabis industry than the presidential race in November. The Senate has been the one blocking all of this. So I think, you know, Constellation doubling down is great validation. And I think it should bring more excitement to the space and more confidence. But I think the thing that's really going to unlock it is if there could be a path opened up to federal legality, and that path very well could open up come November. So watch out. That's what I think will get people in the game in a major way.
Got it. Very cool. Well, that's a good one to go out on, man. Thank you, Nick, for joining us. Kushco Holdings, you guys, we really appreciate you being on here, Nick. And I'm sure we'll see you very soon. In fact, on June 1st, I think.
Yes, June 1st. Excited to be at your event and love the work that you guys are doing. Keep up the good work. Thank you for having me on. Happy to come on anytime.
And Nick, keep doing the great work, man. It's awesome seeing your company and the success you guys are having. I'm sure it's just like they say, money fouls, doesn't lead. And you can't plan for the stock price. Just keep doing what you guys are doing, and good things will, I assume, will come.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Take care, guys.
So, Patrick.
That's a pretty impressive guy, right? He's really one of the OGs in the space.
Absolutely. And the way he looks at the business and doesn't hope for like a Pollyanna type thing where, you know, hopefully, hey, you know, the business changes, cutting costs, making the reason I brought that up about the bad expenses or bad people that owe them, it's like to take that kind of bullet and maybe they collect some of that money, but they're trying to like show investors, here's what we're doing. And if things are better, then that's great upside. And so I think companies doing that over time, I think great things to follow. I mean, obviously the industry changes over time, but this is one of the, like you said, original OGs. And the other thing I like that he mentioned was, I know it's probably a little thing, but the athlete. I think people in team sports that compete for, you know, winning things, they have a mentality like, hey, I mean, it's like that Rocky mentality. We're not going to be counted out. We're going to fight and we're going to win. We're going to be successful. I believe in the company. I believe in him, and it's very, very exciting company. So
well, it's probably another reason why you stayed in Detroit and you founded Benzinga in Detroit instead of going to New York or one of the other metropolitan areas, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's taken that like, you know, fight. You don't need to go where everyone else is going. Do it your way. I want to mention for people listening on audio or wherever, you can go to bzcannabishour.com and sign up your email address and or cell phone to get alerted by email or text for future events that we have. If it's by text, we're going to use it very, very sparingly just to alert you for the show and who's on or future events we have.
Jason might text you, so be prepared for that.
Yes, yes. I may send a text once in a while, but just on our site, there's a right corner. You can put your cell phone if you want to be alerted. It's not going to be something where you're getting excessive stuff. Also, feel free to email us at events@benzinga.com for feedback of other people you'd like to see on the show or getting involved with our June 1st event, which is at bzcannabis.com. I think they can see more about
it. That's right.
Yeah. And the June 1st is awesome. I know one of the panels that you guys added yesterday was Isaiah Thomas from the Pistons, you know, back, you guys probably seen it in the Last Dance, Al Harrington and John Sally, which that's just one of the like guys who are athletes who are in the space, but the names that they have on for this event, I don't think you've seen anywhere. We are getting close to being sold out. So it's not one where you can just wait to get a ticket. If you want to network with these people, you got to, you know, purchase a ticket. And the reason we do that is we try to bring the best of the best in the room, and we want you to create deals, create business, create synergies. And if we just make it free, it's really hard for people to find who to talk to. And there's a lot of noise in there. Now you can watch for free, I think on YouTube, but you won't be able to network or connect with any of the people. And that's the key thing is the connection. So bzcannabis.com. There may be a Memorial Day sale starting tomorrow and that ends on Saturday or Sunday for like 30% off. If there's not, then I don't know. We could do a BZ.
There is, don't worry.
Okay. So yeah, you should be there. If you're into this thing at all, you should be there and you should not miss it. It's really easy to sit home and do nothing. The people that go out there and create stuff and connect with people are the ones that people are going to be talking about a year or 2 years from now or 3 years from now. So this is your chance, your opportunity to be in on a huge event like this. We'd love to see you there because we like to see our.
That's right.
I know Patrick wants to introduce the next guest, but
I do. Yeah, thank you. I'm going to rein this in.
I got the voice.
You did it really well. So I'm really excited about this next guest, and here's why. It's Nancy Whiteman, CEO of Wana Brands. Nancy has been called the queen of legal weed, the Martha Stewart of edibles. Now, how cool is it to talk to somebody like that? Nancy and Wana, I'll ask Nancy as she comes on. Nancy, hello. Hi, and you might just want to unmute yourself if you haven't.
I'm unmuted.
There we go. Okay, we have you. So Nancy, the Martha Stewart of edibles, the queen of legal weed, I feel like I should have had like a scepter ready for you when you joined us today.
A nice touch, yes.
Ah, damn, I missed it. I'm sorry. Well, one thing, BDS, our friends at BDS said that, was it 2019, the number one ranked edibles brand in terms of sales revenue in the U.S., was Wana Brands. That's pretty impressive. How did you build that?
Oh, it's nothing. No.
Oh, yeah. Why not? So, I mean, tell us, give us a little flavor about Juan.
Nancy, I bet you were just like overnight success. Happened last night. Boom. Right. So they all say.
Well, no, actually, you know, it did take a while. So we're actually celebrating our 10th year anniversary this year.
Wow.
Part of the OG, like Nick.
You are an OG, yes.
Yep. So, you know, Juana has sort of an interesting story because having started out in Colorado 10 years ago, we were in a really interesting situation where the barriers to entry were actually low. You know, if you weren't a felon and you could raise a little bit of money, you could get into the industry. And so my partner and I really bootstrapped Juana, started it 10 years ago, of course, on the medical side, because that's all that there was at that point in time. And we just built the company very carefully and sustainably, and were able, believe it or not, to really get to where we are without any outside investment, without any debt. So, and we've been profitable for 8 years. So I'm very, our big focus has been, you may know us mostly in the edible space, but we also were an OG of the out-of-state expansion. So we started that about 5 years ago, and we're currently in 8 markets and launching in 4 more right now. And the pandemic certainly has been kind of an interesting variable to put into that.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, when it comes to the markets that you are either in, Nancy, or going into, where do you see the most opportunity? I mean, I know that, you know, the conversation in the industry, it seems for the past year or maybe a bit longer than that, has been that, you know, there are certain markets that are going to be quite good for the industry, right? Whether it's Florida, whether it's New York, even Pennsylvania and even Michigan, where we are, right? In terms of all the medical patients we have here and translating that to the adult rec market. So what does it look like for you as you're entering these markets and which seems to be most prevalent for you?
So, you know, I love the Midwest. Yes. My extended family is all from Chicago, so I probably have some built-in love for it there. But some of our most exciting markets right now are the Midwestern markets. We are in Michigan, and Illinois. So those have been enormous growth markets for us, having recently gone to adult use. Ohio's doing extremely well for us. And believe it or not, we launched in Oklahoma 2 weeks into the pandemic. So a core in the Midwest, which is doing extremely well for us. On the West Coast, we have, of course, Colorado, which is home for us, California, and Oregon, and Arizona. I'm, of course, excited. I think Arizona is widely thought to be going adult use come November. And so will be a very exciting market for us. We've done extremely well in that market. And California, we all know all the California challenges, which I can elaborate or not, depending on our time. Then really the big hurrah for us, I think in the next year or so, is the East Coast. We are in the process right now of launching in Maryland. We have a partnership already established in Florida, and we have great interest, obviously, in New Jersey and New York, and those markets online. So I think that, geographically speaking, I think that the East Coast is going to be sort of our focus area for the next couple of years in terms of opening new markets. But what I would say even about our existing 8 markets is that, you know, we introduce with our classic gummies, which is sort of our lead product, if you will. But we have enormous growth, not just in the classic gummies, but in all the other products that Juana has, including our Juana Quick line, which we came out with in Colorado about 3 or 4 months ago, which has been doing incredibly well. It's a fast onset gummy. The onset's about 5 to 15 minutes. But the thing that is really cool about it is the way it's metabolized in the body. It gives a smoker-like high, as opposed to an edibles high, because it's being metabolized in the bloodstream. So it stays as Delta 9, as opposed to going through the liver, which turns it from delta 9 into 11 hydroxy. So we have a whole bunch of growth, both in existing and new markets.
All right, you went over my head there. That is great. Delta 9 and you bring a sophistication to it that most don't. I mean, that know the products like yeah. So. On top of your gummies, you mentioned it before that. Actually, how many people work at WANA?
So we have about 100 employees.
You do?
At WANA.
Is it mostly like in production, research, sales? Like, how does it like?
It's, if I had to divvy it up, I would say that it's probably about 60% in operations, production, and delivery, and all of that. The way we do our out of state deals is that we typically partner versus building out our own facilities. So we do have some out of state employees, but most of them are in Colorado.
Got it. So what are you seeing right now for you guys, the most popular products? I know you mentioned the gummies. Are preferences changing? But what are you seeing in terms of sales and popularity of products at WANA?
Yeah, that's a good question with a complicated answer, because the answer really does change a little bit based on the market that we're looking at. So for example, if we look at Colorado, which is home for us, we have seen a lot of volatility in the markets over the last 2 months. We had a blockbuster March as people stocked up. And then there were so many different sort of moving parts to what was happening in the marketplace. The regulations were changing around stay at home. First, you know, were we going to be an essential business or not? Then it was curbside. Then, okay, not just curbside, but social distance. Then we had snowstorms. Then we had 420. So there's been enormous volatility in the Colorado market. And a lot of that was also driven by the fact that we lost our tourism cannabis sales. The ski resorts shut down early, et cetera. But the good news is we've seen tremendous stabilization in May, and that at a very nice clip. We're very happy with what we're seeing. Now, our other markets have been also interesting. In general, I'd say that it's been a very net positive for WANA. And what we're seeing is that what happens in a particular market is a function of a lot of different things. It's how new the market is. Taking your market, for example, Michigan, it's been on a huge growth trajectory overall, just because it's so new to adult use. So it's a function of the maturity of the market, the availability of home delivery. Obviously, that's been a big driver in some markets like California, the dependence of the market on tourism, and then the particular rules of the states around dispensaries and what they can do and what they can't. So while we've seen positive results overall, we do see some variations based on market.
Well, and Nancy, has that at all affected will that at all affect any of your marketing strategies around the products, right? In terms of, you know, specific markets that haven't been as volatile, or, you know, to take your market in Colorado, for instance, how do you combat that volatility with the way you get the story out about the brand?
Yeah, well, you make a great point there, Patrick, because I think that traditionally the brands have been more B2B focused because we've been selling to dispensaries primarily.
Right.
And so, as we all know, a lot of the influencer to the purchased product is actually the bud tender. So when you now are in an environment where you don't have the bud tender saying, oh, WANA, they're the best gummies, definitely. You know, it requires brands to start pivoting towards more business to consumer strategies. And I will say that being an established brand and being a trusted brand that's been around for a long time is an enormous advantage during COVID.
Sure.
Because a couple of reasons. First of all, there is no bud tender saying, hey, try this new thing. But secondly, what all the information from past crisis situations shows is that people like to stick to tried and true familiar brands during times of crisis. It's not the time when they're really inclined to do a lot of experimentation. They know what they like and they want that. Now, what it in terms of marketing strategy, I think what we are, what we're finding is that. Sorry, I'm just closing up some other stuff here.
No worries.
No worries. I have to say this while you're closing that stuff up. The chat room people are loving you, Nancy. They love Wanna Brands. They're talking about you.
We love you back.
There it is.
I'm not just blowing smoke. They are passionate fans of you. So just wanted.
Well, there's one question. There's one question that just came in from the chat. Why don't we read it to you, Nancy? It's this person uses your edibles cut up to introduce people to medical cannabis in to microdose, which works for many conditions. How do you see microdosing as a part of recreational cannabis?
How do I see microdosing as a part of recreational cannabis?
I think so, yeah.
I love microdose products, and we're going to be coming out with more microdose products and actually lower dosages than we currently go to. What I love about microdose, even in a recreational setting, is that it enables people to dial in their experience at a level of specificity that I think is very helpful. One of the things that I think holds edibles back as a category is that so many people have kind of heard the horror stories about, I had too much, I ate too much, oh, I tried it, I didn't feel anything in 15 minutes, so I took some more. And by the time it actually kicks in, it's a little bit too much and people are uncomfortable with it. And so the combination of microdose products and our increasing focus on quick onset technology really addresses that. People can feel the results of the product quickly, and then they can calibrate it quickly with a low dose micro dosed incremental product. So I'm a huge fan.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, it's definitely something that we've all heard, and some of these athletes. I think there was a Miami Heat basketball player who had edibles on a team plane and was having not so great a trip. So certainly because he probably had too much. So it's certainly been in the news. I think, you know, when it comes to where we are now, Nancy, in this market, and obviously the markets were doing what they were doing before COVID hit, right? And now COVID has in some ways exacerbated that sort of decline. And in some ways, it's provided a jumpstart for some of these companies to sort of reset. We were talking about that with Tahira and with Nick a little while ago. So you as an executive in this space, a leader in this industry, what do you say to those folks out there who are looking for what to do next right now?
In terms of brands that are looking what to do?
I think so. Or just operators in general, right? Anybody who's looking at the markets and wondering, how do I lead my company forward right now? And maybe from your own experience, giving them some advice on what they would do.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love your use of the word reset, because I think that what COVID has done for us is, I like the expression, people are sometimes calling it the great pause, right? What it is doing is giving people the opportunity to step back a little bit, to take a look at their business strategies and to say, do I want to keep doing this or do I want to make changes in some ways? And for Wanna, we certainly are very intentionally going through that process right now. Part of it I talked about a little bit, but I think will be a permanent shift, is I think permanently we're going to start putting more emphasis on B2C strategies. But what I would also say is that I also think it's important for people to stay true to their brand and to really, you know, at Wanna, we're really all about quality, consistency, and innovation, right? Those are our three mantras. And so we're using this time to actually double down on those things, not to pull back. So to the extent of the company, and we're fortunate, you know, we're profitable and we've got the cash to do it. But for companies that have that luxury, that they don't have to be pulling back on every penny, this is just this amazing opportunity to focus and to become even more and deeper who you are as a brand. And that's how we're using the time.
I love that.
Which is smart. I mean, you guys Diversifying, but also building that brand. I mean, that's the thing. How many years have you guys been around? You said 10 years, 10-year anniversary, right, this year. And did the company basically, did you guys pivot at all with the changing taste in the market? Or was it always the plan that you came up with 10 years ago? It's been, you know, following that. I mean, how does that go? How did you go about when you made those changes? Or what kind of things came up like that?
You know, I'm laughing because when we started 10 years ago, there was no BDSA. There was no roadmap at all on how to build a successful company. We were completely operating in the blind. There was no industry data at all. And so what we did, which I think was very typical of companies back then, is we just tried a whole bunch of stuff. You know, I used to joke that my market research budget was just coming out with new products, putting it in the marketplace and seeing what sold. We didn't do a formal market research at that point in time. Now we do a lot more of that than we did. But I think one of the things about our experience, and we had everything from, you know, infused nuts to beef jerky to chewing gum, all kinds of stuff that is no longer on the market. I would say, one of the things that I would say is that I think it's important not to fall in love too much with your own ideas. You have to let the marketplace help you decide what's worth continuing to invest in and when you should take something off the market. I'm a big believer in, first of all, less is more, right? I think it's overwhelming to have hundreds of different SKUs and not to be known for anything in particular. Sure. So we have a very strong, which is our gummies, and I think we build off of that platform and from there.
Phenomenal. Nancy, it's been our pleasure to have you. We've kept you over, so thank you for indulging us in the conversation, and we look forward to the next time we have to feature you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And congrats on all your success. I mean, it's an awesome story, and just congrats. Keep it up.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk soon, Nancy. Thank you.
Stay well, everybody.
Yep. So... That's Patrick. I mean, we got some of the most successful companies on the line today. I mean, you saw the chat response to Nancy.
I mean, it's really fun, right? It's fun to watch these guys reinvent, right? Whether it's Tahira, who's literally had almost every role there is to have in the cannabis industry, and then Nick and Nancy, who have been in this industry from the beginning, right? With its ups, its downs, its reinventions of their brands, its expansions and you know, retractions at some point. I think that it's really cool to watch these guys continue to push the envelope, you know.
And I think
so, yeah.
It's like you didn't get back in the day when companies like Google or Nike or Tesla were starting, you didn't get front or back court, whatever you want to call it, inside access to the leaders building these companies. And that's what you have the opportunity in this vertical to get back to stage access and understand who these people are. Who are you going to believe? Like when you buy a stock or a company invest, you see letters and you hear their sales, but to really get the company, you have to get deep. And that's kind of what we're trying to bring everyone. So you can get deep with these guys. And that's what we're doing with our June 1st event. We're bringing a lot of people in that get to learn their business. You have a bunch of companies presenting their business, how they're going to operate. Some are going to be wildly successful. I mean, I still remember. So one of the companies, you know, I like is Tesla. The only reason I know about it is because one person exposed me to it on a Saturday 7 years ago. So the same kind of thing, you know, for the June 1st event, you're going to be exposed to certain companies that could be companies that, like Tesla, went from $38 to $800. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but if you don't go out there and like listen and pay attention and you just keep doing the same thing you're doing every day, you're not going to find these opportunities. You're not going to be aware of these opportunities. So I just think that this part is so important. So, so important that change it up, get bigger results. And
Now's the time to do that, right? This is our reset. We hit the reset button. COVID hit it for us. So it's certainly the time to not necessarily change if change is not the right avenue for you, but certainly grow in different ways, right?
Yep, totally. Because it's easy to sit back and not do anything. but then you don't get results. If you don't want results, that's fine. But going out there and learning what's going on in the industry just makes you smarter, and you don't hear about it on TV 6 months after it happened. I mean, everyone talks now about, you know, certain companies, but these, if you get there, you get deeper, you get closer to them. That's what we're trying to do at Benzinga. The reason Benzinga exists, we want to connect people to products, companies to investors, investors to companies before everyone else starts talking about them. I mean, that's the name of the game. So I see that I've already gotten like 4 emails from people from this from today's show, which is awesome. We want that kind of feedback. Again, email us at events@benzinga.com. It'll go to Patrick and I. If there's any guests that you would like us to bring on, if you have any questions about the June 1st event, these are times where people are going to make stuff happen, and we want to bring that to you. So I don't know, Patrick, we got to do some more ribbing. You got to rip on me more a little bit with my weird microphone and stuff in the way.
Don't worry, you know? Silver Fox. Don't worry. I got you.
Thank you. You got a nice dim light in there, I see. So
Thank you.
I think a good show. I see our logo on the screen right there. Definitely exciting show. I mean, the people we're bringing, but I just want to keep taking it to another level. So Patrick and I, we just want to keep taking it to another level. So if you guys have things like, hey, maybe you want us to do a quick, you know, speed round with guests, maybe we'll try that. We're open to it. So I don't know. Anything, any final words? I know you talked about the advisory council. I saw that announcement today. It's amazing. Team we've assembled there. So anything else, any final
words? Not from me. No, I'm proud of what we're doing at Benzinga to continue to shine the light on this industry and those companies that are choosing to grow right now and to scale in different and unique and exciting ways. So you'll see that June 1st. You'll see those folks on this Cannabis Hour. And we look forward to interacting with each of you watching today and in the future. Be well, everyone.
Yep. See you guys later. Thanks for tuning in.
Hi, it's Idris Elba here with Booking.com, and I wrote this poem about summer because I love summer. In summer, we do things to feed the soul, and Booking.com knows just how we roll. We love to swim and fish and barbecue. We love to read and nap and have a few. With cabins, resorts, yurts, and vacation homes, it's such a breeze to book. Where shall we roam? I know it needs some work, but thanks for listening. Find your perfect place to stay. Booking.com, Booking.com. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for baking your way here on this toasty morning. Are you all ready to jam? Excellent. Before we get rolling, let's start by hashing out everything bagel we'll be discussing. Profit margins are okay, but they could maybe be butter. Sorry, I don't mean to waffle. Next quarter, it's all or muffin. Did you have a question, Sausage Patty?
My name's Patricia.
When you can't take your mind off breakfast, it matters where you stay. Delicious breakfast available at our Hilton family of brands. Hilton, for the stay.